Good afternoon. Welcome to Three Tune Tuesday for Tuesday, April the 11th. If you are a returning guest, welcome back. It's nice to have you here and see you again. If this is your first time visiting, then welcome. You have found your way to my virtual country cottage. Please come in, have a seat in the parlor. There are enough oversized, well-cushioned Victorian chairs for all. Close your eyes and let yourself be transported back to the 1920s with me. Three Tune Tuesday is an opportunity for me to share some vintage pre-1924 78 RPM records from my collection. Some of these records are vintage, some are popular, some you've probably never ever heard before. The one commonality amongst them all is that they all have a great deal of character. These songs are all recorded acoustically before the advent of electric amplification. Today I'll be playing all three selections on my Victrola the Ninth, or as is printed on the serial label, VV1X in Roman numerals. This was a popular phonograph from the Victor Talking Machine Company. It's a tabletop model, and it has a really fantastic sound to it. This last weekend in North America and much of the Catholic world was Easter. Next weekend in many Orthodox countries is Easter. Wherever you may be, should you celebrate it, happy Easter. Regardless of what your religious affiliations may be, I'm hoping and wishing for peace for everyone. In North America, Canada, and the United States, of which both I am very familiar, Easter brings with it the Easter Bunny. The origin of the Easter Bunny can be traced back to pre-Christian pagan traditions in Europe, particularly in Germanic cultures. Now, of course, a lot of what was handed down into England and, by default, Canada and the United States did come from these Germanic cultures, with England being an Anglo-Saxon language itself. The hare, or the bunny, or the rabbit, whatever you may wish to call it, was often a symbol of fertility and rebirth because of its association with the moon and the lunar cycle. You know, and there are bunnies and hares everywhere. It's an ongoing, long-standing joke that bunnies reproduce. That's what they're very good at. It's what they're best at. In early Christianity, the symbolism of the hare was adapted to represent the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The hare's ability to produce large litters of offspring was seen as a metaphor for the rebirth and renewal of the world. The modern tradition of the Easter Bunny is thought to have developed in Germany in about the 17th century, when the Easter Hare brought colored eggs and sweets to children during the Easter season. German immigrants brought the tradition to the United States in the 18th and 19th century, and it's since become a very popular part of Easter celebrations in many countries. I'm familiar with, as a child growing up in Canada, in one of these countries, that the Easter Bunny is depicted as a friendly rabbit who brings Easter eggs and treats to kids Easter morning. I know I always looked forward to having a basket of primarily chocolate and egg-shaped chocolate waiting for me every Easter morning, and it's something that I have passed down to my children as well. It's a very fun pastime. So with Easter and Christianity and Catholicism in mind, we're going to kick off Three Tune Tuesday this week with a Christianity and Catholic-inspired song. There were a lot of them at the time. You know, and it did not take very long for me to flip through my collection to choose one. We are going to listen to a song by Homer Roadheaver. Now, Homer Roadheaver, in addition to having perhaps the best name ever invented by humankind, was an American evangelist, gospel singer, and songwriter who lived from 1880 to 1955. He's best known for his collaborations with the famed evangelist Billy Sunday, for whom he served as the song leader during revivals in the early 20th century. Roadheaver was born in Ohio and began his career as a vaudeville performer before becoming a Christian and dedicating his talents to gospel music. He went on to become one of the most prominent gospel singers of his time, recording over 3,000 songs during his career. Roadheaver's style was characterized by his clear voice and his ability to connect emotionally with his listeners. He also wrote many of his own songs, including Heavenly Sunshine and I Surrender All, which became popular hymns in the evangelical community. In addition to his work with Billy Sunday, Roadheaver also performed with other prominent evangelists such as J. Wilbur Chapman and Mordecai Ham. He was inducted into the Gospel Music Hall of Fame in 1988. He began recording for the Victor Company in 1916 and continued to do so throughout the 1920s and early 1930s. The exact number of songs he recorded for Victor is not known, despite the good record-keeping that Victor did. But it is estimated that he recorded over 500 titles just for them alone. Many of his recordings, such as the one that we're listening to today, were made using acoustical recording. You know, this was before the advent of electrical amplification, which required the performers to sing or play directly into a horn. Despite the limitations of this technology, Roadheaver's recordings are still highly regarded for their musicality and emotional power, which a lot of the early records of the day really do have is some good emotion behind him. So the song that we're listening to is named My Wonderful Dream. It was recorded in 1920. It was composed by Charles H. Gabriel, a prolific songwriter of gospel music himself during the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Here we have My Wonderful Dream.
His beauty I see. Oh,
as I pull the needle off of the record and wind up the phonograph for the next song, I will point out that this particular record from Homer Roadheaver is over 100 years old, and it still sounds as clear and concise as it does. When I am over 100 years old, I am hopeful that I will sound just as good. The next song we have to share today is also one with a voice in it. Normally, I will share primarily instrumentals. The recording technology of the time, you know, back in this acoustic recording era, made it very difficult for voices to be recorded. They did need to record very close to a horn. The sounds were then transferred onto a wax stylus, and the voices didn't always come through as clear as we would expect them to, perhaps. Now, obviously, with that last song, it turned out very, very well. The next song that we have is by Enrico Caruso. Caruso was an Italian operatic tenor. Now, he lived and recorded in the, well, he was born in 1873, and he recorded in the early parts of the 20th century up until his death in 1921. He is considered to be one of the greatest tenors in the history of opera, and is often referred to as the King of Tenors. He was born in Naples, Italy, and began his career as a singer in his early 20s, performing in regional opera houses throughout Italy. In 1903, he made his debut at the Metropolitan Opera in New York City, which marked the beginning of his international career. Very quickly after that, he became one of the most sought-after singers in the world and performed in major opera houses across Europe and North America. He was known for his powerful and expressive voice, as you will hear, as well as his ability to convey a wide range of emotions through his singing. He has a distinctive timbre, remarkable vocal range, and allowed him to perform both heroic and lyrical roles with equal ease. He has been in a number of very famous operas. He was Rodolfo in Puccini's La Boheme. He was the Duke of Mantua in Verdi's Rigoletto, which I have played songs before in this particular show. And he was also in Pagliacci, which I have also shared some songs from previously. He recorded very extensively. He recorded, in fact, over 260 records for the Victor Talking Machine Company alone. He recorded some for others, but not nearly as prolifically. Sadly, he died in 1921 at the age of 48, so as opera singers go, he was arguably just hitting his prime. Most of his recordings do use acoustical recording technology at the time. Despite this, his voice came along just clear as a bell. It's difficult to determine exact sales. Victor did keep very good records themselves, but they did not keep records of the actual number of sales that their retailers would have made. But it's estimated that he sold Caruso alone between 12 million to 25 million records. This would have equated to somewhere between 10 million to arguably 20 million songs, because not all records had songs on both sides. 78 RPM records were limited to one song per side, and in many cases with the high-end artists such as Caruso, the records were sold with printing on only one side. The second side of the record would have been blank and flat. Now, sadly for Caruso and others of the time, royalties were not a thing. The artists were paid to record the song, and they were paid somewhere between peanuts to a substantial amount. But the recording company themselves would have kept all of the profits at that point. the recordings, the songs, the records would have been used by the artists primarily as a form of advertising, where they would have gotten their primary income through touring, through Caruso's case in the opera houses, so on and so forth. The song that we're listening to today is translated into English as Martha, the Last Rose of Summer, and was recorded way back in 1904. That makes this particular record close to 120 years old. The song was composed by Frederick von Flotow for his opera Martha. The lyrics for this particular song describe a man's admiration for the beauty of a woman named Martha. Yes, this was well before Batman and Superman. Caruso's recording of the song became one of the most famous and beloved, became one of his most famous and beloved, and really did help to solidify his reputation as one of the greatest tenors of all time. It's been reissued, this song, on numerous collections of his work, and it remains to be a pretty beloved classic of the time. So let me get this particular record wound up, get a needle changed. It is worth pointing out that back in the days of shellac records, the needles and the stylus was used once per song and then replaced because the shellac would wear it down and dull it, and it would then begin to damage the record if played a second time. So here we have Martha, the Last Rose of Summer.
Oh!
So if you, like me, enjoy these songs and the voice of Caruso, then you, like me, would be curious to think what the judges on America's Got Talent would think of that. 120 years later, and it still sounds absolutely fantastic. So before we get into our third and final song of the day, which happens to be on the most used record that I have of the day, I'd like to bring out a couple of programming and contact notes. Tomorrow night, the 12th, at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, we are hosting our Electric Dreams live stream. It will be Welcome to Bonaparte's Country Cottage featuring Electric Dreams, where we will be sharing early electrically recorded songs between the years 1926 to 1937. Unlike Three Tune Tuesday today, Electric Dreams does not get recorded and turned into a podcast, so if you do want to listen to it, you must listen to it live. Starting in just a couple of weeks as well, to get you started in the day, we are going to soon be hosting Morning Coffees with Bonaparte. This will be a short 15-minute show, 7 a.m. in the morning. We'll feature some fun little tidbits, a good song to get you going into the day, and we'll then lead into the second 15 minutes of the Victor Morning Health exercises. Of course, if you have any requests to make, comments, concerns, feel free to reach out to me. You can reach me at bonaparte@blindskeleton.one or on Twitter as well. Feel free to tweet at me @skeleton_one. I am Bonaparte, your blind skeleton, and I do love listening to each and every one of you. Now, the last song that we have for you today is arguably the best ever song we have for you today. It is named Best Ever Medley. It is a song by Paul Whiteman and his Ambassador Orchestra. I have played Paul Whiteman before. I will do so again. He is one of my favorite band leaders. We have only a few minutes left in the show, and this is a longer song. It's a 12-inch record, so it's getting up to 4.5 minutes in length. So without too much chat on my part as to who Paul Whiteman is, here is Best Medley Ever.